It's time now for Super Psychologist, Dr. Mara Karpel, and your golden years.
Good evening and welcome to Dr. Mara Karpel and Your Golden Years. This evening and every Sunday evening at 5 p.m. Central Time and that's 6 p.m. Eastern Time right here on blogtalkradio.com and on drmarakarpel.com. And today is Sunday, January 29th, 2023, and I'm psychologist Dr. Mara Karpel, and we are here in beautiful Austin, Texas, ready for another great program for you today. And Art Mendoza of Accomplice Entertainment, producer of this program, is here with us to make the show run smoothly as usual. And in a little while after the break, we'll be joined once again by CEO of Acceleration Partners, Wall Street Journal and USA Today international best-selling author, writer of the weekly column Friday Forward, and the host of the Elevate podcast, Robert Glaser. And this time, Robert joins us to discuss his latest book, which is about to launch any day now, Elevate Your Team, Empower Your Team to Reach Their Full Potential and Build a Business That Builds Leaders. Then later in the program, our friend, a regular to the show, the very talented jazz saxophonist Paula Atherton will be back to discuss what's new with her music, and we'll be playing some of her original music. And along the way, I'll continue with more caregiver tips for the new normal. After the show, you can hear this evening's program again by going to my website, and the link to the podcast will be posted later tonight along with any website links that we discuss on the program. And you can also hear the podcast in as soon as 5 minutes after the show ends by going directly to Blog Talk Radio, B-L-O-G, talkradio.com/yourgoldenyears. And you'll also be able to hear it in 5 minutes after the show on Apple Podcasts. For information from previous programs, to listen to all of the previous programs going all the way back since we started on Blog Talk Radio 9 years ago, go to my website, drmarakarpel.com, or go directly to blogtalkradio.com/yourgoldenyears, and all of those shows are also on Apple Podcasts. For information about upcoming programs and events, be sure to follow me on Facebook, Dr. Mara Karpel, Your Golden Years. This evening's show is produced by Accomplice Entertainment and Psyched Up Productions and sponsored by A Mighty Good Time. Wondering what to do after you're 50? How about having a mighty good time? It's free to search, free to post, and much more. Whether it's in person or virtual, anything can be found to fill your day connecting with other people. So be more active and start connecting with like-minded people. Go to amightygoodtime.com. That's amightygoodtime.com. All right, we're going to take a brief break, but don't go anywhere. It'll be very brief. We'll be playing our other sponsors' commercials, and we'll be back soon with author Robert Glaser about his latest book, Elevate Your Team. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Super psychologist Dr. Mara Karpel will be back after words from our sponsors.
Are you or a loved one a Medicare beneficiary? Help save you and Medicare money by stopping Medicare fraud. Fraud happens when Medicare is billed services or supplies you never received. There are three easy things you can do to prevent fraud. Review your Medicare claims for accuracy, protect your personal information, and look for any suspicious activity. For more information or to report fraud, call Medicare at 1-800-MEDICARE or call your local Medicare SHIP program at 1-800-252-9240.
Please visit us on the web at www.drmarakarpel.com.
And we are back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Karpel and your golden years right here on blogtalkradio.com and on drmarakarpel.com. And now we are joined once again by CEO of Acceleration Partners, Wall Street Journal and USA Today, international best-selling author, writer of the weekly column Friday Forward, and the host of Elevate podcast, Robert Glaser, to talk about his latest book. Welcome, Robert.
Thanks for having me back.
Thank you for coming back. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Although it's hard, hard to believe January, we're almost through January at this point.
I know. The time goes fast. And, you know, this is the third time you've been on the program. And I looked back and I saw that the first time was like just in August 2020. So it was quite a while ago.
So, right. it's been a pandemic, yeah. Still there?
Ooh, I'm still here. Got muted for a second.
Okay.
Yeah, what I said was that when you first came on the program, we were in the worst part of the pandemic.
Yeah. And now we're kneeling to move on to manage and deal with what comes next.
Right, exactly. The new normal.
Exactly.
So, you know, the first time that you were on the program, you talked about your first two books, Elevate and Friday Forward. And then the last time, speaking of the pandemic, you spoke about thriving in the virtual workplace, which many of us are still doing. So what brought you to this latest book, Elevate Your Team?
Yeah, so Elevate and Friday Forward kind of go hand in hand. And Elevate, I talked about this framework of capacity building and really applied to sort of individual leaders and their team across this framework of spiritual, intellectual, physical, and emotional capacity. And Friday Forward had a lot of stories that were aligned across those spectrums. I had already, you know, for a while in our organization, we had been on this journey of how do we grow the company by growing the team? And so what I started to realize was, you know, I'd focus on the individual leadership element, but Elevate Your Team takes the same capacity building kind of structure and says, how do you do this within an organization as a whole? And I think the timing is, look, it's better to be lucky sometimes than smart, but the timing's really relevant on this, because after the pandemic and sort of I think we're reaching an end of a decade of this sort of churn and burn venture backed company. I think a lot of leaders are looking for a new playbook, because I just don't think the playbook of the last 10 or 20 years is going to work in the next decade. And I think a lot of what I talk about in that book is how to build sort of a more sustainable business by actually growing the people within the business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you know, that actually makes me think about how things were already changing before the pandemic, because the younger employees were more aware and looking for work that
something different that, yeah
they were looking for work that they felt passionate about.
The command and control playbook has not even been used by the military for years, so I think we were moving away from that.
Mm-hmm.
But even the sort of Silicon Valley new age, whatever, there was this sort of just work people, just work them to death and then get new people. Everyone is so burned out right now after a couple years of the pandemic that I just don't think that's not going to work. No pun intended.
Right. Yeah, I think, and I mean, you could see that with people looking for new jobs and leaving lower paying jobs to go to higher paying jobs, or discovering that they want to go to work that feeds their soul rather than just a paycheck.
And I think, look, and look at what the gig economy has turned into, right? You don't need to get, you know, a job. You can go, you know, work whenever you want to. So if organizations mm-hmm. are going to recruit and keep people, they need to make a compelling reason why they should stay with that organization. I think the organization has a really great win-win opportunity to help those people to become better holistically and to be the beneficiary of that in the workplace, but also see that these are people who are learning and growing. And eventually we'll be ready for the next thing, either at that organization or elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the recommendations you make to build, you know, stronger working team and to provide that atmosphere of passion for the employees so that they want to stay with that organization?
Yeah, so it really goes across the spectrum. So if we talk about that notion of spiritual capacity, I think it's helping people figure out what they're good at, their core values. I think people really lead authentically from their values and understanding that. Like, we don't have a single type of leadership at our organization. We have best practices, but we want people to really figure out who they are, what are they good at, how they want to lead. So it's really helping employees with that self-discovery. On the intellectual side, I think there's a couple of things, like, teaching, you know, working on feedback, a culture that sort of values feedback, a culture that teaches, like, discipline in all aspects of the job and routine and, like, you know, what does a productive workday look like? And what should you, I know this sounds crazy, but, like, you know, what should you do when you get up, and particularly when you're working from home in the morning, and, like, actually working with people on, hey, you really shouldn't roll out of bed and jump on your phone. That's not a great way to start your day. So the intellectual capacity really is about kind of, I think as an organization, you really kind of, again, work holistically on helping people develop better habits, better skills, a culture about learning and growing, you know, whether that's book clubs or podcast clubs. And then feedback is a really big part of that, both learning how to get it and to receive it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I know that you make a big point in the book about how your outer life affects your, you know, your personal life affects your work life as well. So how can the organization support people, employees, in having a more vital personal life? We usually don't, when I was, you know, first started working, that was certainly not part of the picture.
Yeah, well, this falls under the realm of physical capacity, so I'm glad you asked that. I mean, in the book, I talk about the story of Marissa Meyer. She took over at Yahoo in 2012, you know, came from this meteoric rise at Google, and she came in kind of in articles bragging about her 100-hour work week, talking about she did 130-hour work week. If you've done the math on this, it's not even across 7 days. There's barely any time to be awake or eat or sleep outside of work. And then she returned to work after she I think was pregnant when she started. You know, returned to work 2 weeks later. And so there's just this culture at Yahoo of just work. And they did 52 acquisitions in her 5 years, and they were all worthless. And really the company like lost value and destroyed value over those 5 years. So to me, that's a great example of clearly like people doing a lot of stuff all the time wasn't doing that. So I think, look, one of the things today, particularly with so many people working from home, like leaders need to create some buffers through work. They need to let people have a life outside of work, like relax, recharge, instead of calling them on vacation, maybe pay them like not to check in on vacation, thinking that, wow, if this person can really like actually get a break, they might come back, you know, better refreshed. And there's also, particularly with the work from home, shifting to leaders managing outcomes, not looking at time or sort of butt in seat as a metric, but we understand this with sales. Like we understand that the salesperson who sells more is more valuable than the salesperson who works tons of hours. So, mm-hmm. I think that a lot of these things are just figuring out what needs to be done. The 80-20 rule, stop focusing so much on the time that people put in versus the quality of the work and the outcomes that they're getting.
Okay. It kind of reminds me, when you were talking, it reminded me of when I went on my internship, pre-doctoral internship for my degree in psychology. That was in like 1990. And at that time, and I don't know if it still works that way, the internship was an opportunity for hospitals or, you know, whatever setting you were hired in to have basically unpaid labor. And they would say, oh, it's a teaching opportunity. And they would work students like 70 hours a week in a hospital setting or ER or, you know, psychiatric facility. And I was lucky enough to actually work in a facility where the head of the program said that we were not allowed to work more than 40 hours a week. And if anybody
we used to make fun of our European colleagues, right? Where all the holidays and stuff like that. But I think as the data comes out, you know, there may be something to that. You know, one of the ways you have a lot of companies now trying this 4-day work week thing, which I think can be tricky because it's hard to go back. But one of the ways they're doing it is they're just eliminating unnecessary meetings. They're eliminating all the stuff that the company should have eliminated anyway and didn't need to do.
Right, right. And they're probably getting more higher quality work from their employees.
Yeah, I mean, no one reports in their hours as success. So I think we've conflated busyness with productivity. And if I go into this deeper in the book, but if you figure out the right outcomes, if you figure out the right metrics and what you're managing, you can give people more flexibility and freedom and say, look, here's what we need to do. It shouldn't take 16 hours a day to do it. And if I want to kind of reward maybe the person who figures out how to do it in 4 hours a day rather than 12 hours a day. Like that person's actually a little more efficient.
Right. So do you suggest actually having, like when somebody figures out how to do it faster, suggest having like workshops on how to do it faster for those who are less efficient? Is that part of elevating your team?
Yeah. Look, I think that there was a guy years ago, I remember on Verizon, and they found that he had outsourced his job for like 3 years and they fired him, you know, right away. Not that I might not have fired him, and there's reason about that, but I actually might have sat down with a guy and said, well, how did you do this? Like, how could we, clearly if you didn't even do the work that we're assigning and someone else did it, maybe there's something we can learn from that. So I think there's so much, when you think about half of what organizations do is they kind of meet every day, there's unnecessarily amount of people in them, there's so much stuff going on where I think we're mistaking busyness for productivity.
Right. What about, you know, you hear a lot about talk, you know, I haven't worked in a corporate setting since, you know, I took temp jobs to get me through college. But I hear about a lot of toxic atmospheres. What are some ways that you can make environments less toxic, aside from obviously, you know, working people till they burn out?
A lot of toxicity comes from bad managers and leaders. I think this gets into a little bit of the final realm, emotional capacity, which is a lot of emotional capacity is sort of developing a workplace that has a lot of psychological safety, which I think is just trust at scale, where people are willing to share things and talk about things. You actually care about people, which doesn't mean that you also don't hold them accountable to what it is that they need to do. But you understand that, you know, these are human beings and people. And I think a lot of times, again, that lack of any real understanding of what's going on with people at any time and you know, not getting to know each other or sort of, you know, sharing. There's a concept called the Johari window, which is by two psychologists, I think their name Joe and Harry, but it's sort of a 2x2 matrix. And on one side is what you know about yourself and what people know about you. And, you know, the goal is to through feedback, you know, you're able to push the window more open about, you know, what you know about yourself. And then, you know, through vulnerability, you can push down through other people know about you. And then everyone's kind of operating more in a known realm. You know, a lot of times in the organization, you have that toxic leader and everyone knows they're a toxic, terrible leader, but they have never been told that. They don't know that no one likes them. They're not getting that feedback, or no one feels safe to go up and say, look, no one on your team likes working for you, right? That's a great culture where someone can say that, or whether that gets out in the open and then it gets dealt with. And maybe the discussion is, you know what, Mara, like, maybe you're not meant to be a leader. Maybe you're better as an individual contributor. Like, you moved from the sales role into managing a sales team, and it doesn't actually seem like you like managing people.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I guess that gets to another point that you brought up in the book, which is communication. That I found interesting as a psychologist, because I think that is something that we really need better communication in all aspects of our life. Can you talk about how to improve communication?
Yeah, so a lot of communication, I think that, you know, part of the first part is we talked about in spiritual capacities, kind of understanding yourself, helping leaders. There are all kinds of different assessments that you can understand, traits and things. I think as you move from understanding yourself to doing that as an organization, like one of the things that I know is like a lot of people on my team, I know a lot about them. I know what their DISC profile is. I know what their core values are. I know what their kind of dominant why is because we've done this stuff. And it's very easy to understand where communication problems happen. They come from different styles. They come from different orientations. I had someone on my team who just started and was really struggling on the leadership team to get someone else on board with something. And I said, well, you know, this person is a make sense person. That's their why. And they really need to understand what they're asking. So this person has a why, and we talk about the whys in the book, a sort of better way, orientation wants to do better. And so they wanted the other person to just commit that they were on board and to support this initiative because it would make things better. And they were like, I don't understand what you want me to do specifically, so I can't. And they were like going back and forth. And after I shared this with the person, and then I went through sort of their orientation, they were like, oh, I totally get, like, I was like, this, you have to approach this person in this way. Give them very specific things to do that they can understand, and they will tell you that they understand them. And it really totally changed their relationship. So I think a lot of these things come down to core differences in orientation and communication style and the way that we look at things. And when you start to know all these things about people on your team, and you know that, like, oh, I'm a quick start person and they're a slow thinker and need to be reflective, you understand why you're going to be in this argument where you just want to move forward and they want to slow down. And you know what? 1 out of 10 times, like, it might be frustrating 8 out of 10 times, but 1 or 2 out of 10 times, that slow down person is going to save you from making a big mistake.
Okay. And I just received a question from a listener who wanted me to ask you about how about incentivization?
Yeah, it's a big part of this. So there's explicit and implicit incentivization. So back to the physical capacity, if you as a leader say to everyone, take your vacation, but then you go on vacation and you're emailing the whole time, you know, that's not really a great way to model that. So versus putting an out of office saying, I'm on vacation and you won't be able to reach me and I'll be back next week. I think that creates incentives, right? And then there's also specific incentives. So as I mentioned this before, we actually give people a reimbursement if they go on vacation and they don't check their email and they don't communicate, because we actually want them to have that vacation. And we think it also makes them design things not have to go through them. and not be all sort of the fail-safe on one person. So, yeah, I think whatever you reward explicitly or implicitly is how people behave, which is why, you know, when Marissa Meyer at Google said to all the moms, well, you know, I don't want you to do what I'm doing. I don't expect that of you. I'm not sure anyone believed that, right? I think when the leader says, oh, well, you know, don't do what I'm doing, that doesn't work in parenting or otherwise. Like, you need to model that or show the incentive or show that you're willing to do it or the organization values it, because people will follow those explicit or implicit incentives or disincentives.
Right. Well, also, if the leader is checking their emails while they're on vacation, then employees are going
to
be
But they're telling other
fearful.
People not to. Yeah.
Right. Like, well, if I was an employee, I would feel like, oh, I'm going to be punished for not checking my emails.
Right. I should do the same. So one of the things that I have done for years, and I learned years ago, like, I used to, when my kids were younger, I'd get up on a quiet Saturday morning. I have all these emails I hadn't gotten to because I was in a lot of meetings, and I would respond to them. And then people would respond back to me over the weekend. And then I heard a trick. And ever since then, so anything that I send outside of normal sort of business hours, I delay delivery until 8 a.m. the next workday. So I might have been sending emails all weekend as I had time to go through things, but I didn't want people to feel like they had to respond. So all those emails go out at 8 a.m. on Monday morning.
Yeah, I remember you said that in the last time we spoke, and that is such a great tip.
Yeah, and that matters to people. So again, I think if I had to summarize what you are as a leader, people, and this is true of parent too, but they respond to what you're doing, not what you're saying.
Right. So do all of these, does all of this work when people are working remotely?
I think it's more important when you're working remotely. So a lot of companies had an easy transition to remote work, and some did not. Imagine a company where there's low trust, where people are valued sort of by, you know, butts in seats, where there's poor communication, where there's poor leadership, and then send everyone home and not have them in the same place. Well, and there's no clear values and culture. Well, you can imagine how that might go. And now imagine a company where there's great communication, strong leaders, a lot of trust, clear core values, clear culture. Then remote work, I think, is a lot easier to do. So I think some of these are foundational. Some of these are foundational things that strengthen any culture, and I just think, like, there's more stress on the system when people are working remotely, right? If you can establish psychological safety and trust and teamwork and invest in people while they're not all in your office every day, I think you have a better chance of keeping them and a better chance of getting them engaged.
Right. So you're saying that it's even more important. All of these issues are even more important when people are working from home.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I just think the degree of difficulty is higher, right? So, you know, again, we might have a culture that, look, we trust you, we empower you, whatever, but at the same time, like, that trust is easily lost. So I think I talk in the book, I believe you should trust first. People use the excuse of the one person that did something wrong to not trust the other 99 first. Again, better to give that trust and say to people, and we say this in our organization, like, look, you're expected to be available during normal work hours. If you need to do something else, that's fine. But tell your leader, tell your boss, like, there's no way to sort of become like lose trust faster in an organization that someone that can't be found regularly during the work day when they're expected to be found.
Right. So you kind of have to, you know, even though you're working from home, you're setting your hours. You're not just doing work here and there. That's
right. You
have
your
arranged.
You can have an exception. Right. So perfect example. Let's say your kid is in the state soccer championship from 3 to 5, you know, and you reach out to your boss and you say, my kid's in the state soccer championship. I'm going to be out from 3 to 5 today. I just want to let someone know Michelle's got it covered. Like, that's totally fine. What's not fine is to go to that and not tell anyone when they were expecting you to be around during that. Again, it feels like you were trying to get away with something. So again, you establish that culture of trust, you do that up front, and then you establish, you know, behavior that is a deviation of that. That's very different than starting out acting like you don't trust people.
Right. Okay. So when is this book launching? It looks like, because when you go to Amazon, it says pre-order. So this is brand new.
Yeah,
it's not even out yet.
March 7th. So we're about 5 weeks away. It's getting fast and furious. But yeah, it launches March 7th across Kindle, hardcover, and audiobook.
Great. Good luck with that. Good luck with the launch.
Thank you very much.
So if listeners are interested in learning more about you and all of your books and your podcasts and your training programs and your Friday Forward column, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, they can go to Robert Glazer, that's RobertGlazer.com, and that's all the books, the podcasts, everything there. If they're interested in learning more just about the book, you can go to EYT, ElevateYourTeamBook.com. So EYTBook.com. And you can pre-order it, and Amazon will, I think they actually do it so that you get it right on launch day.
Great. Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on to the program again. And, you know, best of luck with this launch. I know those are kind of crazy. And have a great 2023.
Thank you very much.
All right. You have a good evening.
All right. Bye-bye. Take care.
All right. We're going to take a break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Dr. Mara's book, The Passionate Life, Creating Vitality and Joy at Any Age, is now available on Kindle and in paperback at Amazon. Don't forget to listen to Dr. Mara Karpel and Your Golden Years live from Austin, Texas, every Sunday on blogtalkradio.com.
Please visit us on the web at www.drmarakarpel.com.
And we are back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Karpel and Your Golden Years right here on blogtalkradio.com and on drmarakarpel.com. And in a little while, we're going to be joined by the great jazz saxophonist Paula Atherton. But before she joins us, I'm going to talk a bit about caregiver issues. And I'm kind of thinking about some of the things that Robert was just talking about in terms of a team, and I tend to think of like a corporate setting, but I think that it really fits in all work settings, this type of, at least the communication and the trust and those concepts that he talks about, spiritual, intellectual, physical, and emotional capacities and understanding each other on those levels. And it also makes me think about how to apply this to dealing with some of these caregiver issues that I'm going to discuss. And I brought it up a few weeks ago. When your loved one is living in a long-term care facility, especially now with COVID still hanging around and causing quarantines and all kinds of issues. But I think this is really an issue in general, that a nursing home is an organization, and the residents and the family members are not employees of that organization, but we have to interact regularly with the whole functioning of the organization. So in a long-term care facility, it's not just the administration and the leaders, the employees, but also the residents and their families. So I'm just kind of putting it together now after having this discussion. And because one of the issues that I was going to bring up is how to approach the administrators, how to approach the employees, the staff, when there are issues with your family member who is a resident of the nursing home. How, as a family member, do you do that? And I think that the communication, the trust, all of that is really an important part of it. So one of the issues that I've mentioned previously is that it's really important to speak up. So this is a communication issue. When there's something going on that we as a family member think is not good for our loved one who is a resident in the facility, specifically, or even if it's something that's affecting many residents, we need to not be afraid to speak up. Now, there is a trust issue there because very often people are afraid to speak up because they're afraid of retribution. So, and I have spoken to people in the nursing homes. I've worked in nursing homes for many years. I've more recently spoken with psychologists in nursing homes and even the long-term care ombudsman, who is a liaison between the family members and residents and the nursing home, and they actually work for the state, whatever state you're in. And they agree that sometimes there is retribution. So if you're making a complaint about a specific caregiver in the facility, that is an issue. So how you do it is really important. How you make that complaint is really important. And when it's a complaint about an administrative issue, there's very little retribution that can happen from an administrator to a resident. They don't have that same hands-on level of care, but it is important that when you do speak up, that you do it politely. So the old adage, you can catch more bees with honey than vinegar, really applies, that people are not going to listen to you if you yell at them. It really needs to be done in a calm, rational way. And sometimes having the power of many voices, many family members of different residents all together can be the most powerful way. So family councils have many benefits in that way, that if you can put together a family council, then you actually have more power to speak to the administrator and bring up issues. What I've learned about starting a family council and speaking with the ombudsman is that the best way, and I guess this goes towards that trust issue that we were just discussing, is your intention when you start a family council. Is the intention to be angry all the time and to always challenge the administration and the staff members of the facility, or is your intention to provide a better, higher quality of life for your loved one in the nursing home and for all the residents in the nursing home? If it's the latter, you're more likely to have success. And if that is the approach that you take when approaching, whether with a family council or individually, when you approach about an issue to the facility, if you have that intention in mind and you communicate that intention, then you're more likely to have success. So, for example, in my own personal case, and I brought this up a couple of weeks ago, my mom is in a nursing home, and her facility is in the state of Connecticut, and they have very strict rules from their health department about when to quarantine if a resident on a unit is testing positive with COVID, because in that particular state, they've had very high levels recently of COVID and people getting sick, even if they were vaccinated, because it's a very vulnerable population. So my concern was about, what are you doing for the residents who are in quarantine, who are not sick, so that they don't develop other issues from isolation? Just sitting in their room and having no contact with other people and no activities. It took a little while, but I was able to find the right person to speak to who heard my concern, and she shared my concern and also got back to me and told me that she met with a state health department representative who had told them that they could now decide quarantines on a case-by-case basis. So that actually is great news, that it isn't always that the whole unit is isolated if one person tests positive, but it depends on the risk on that particular unit. But they had no creative ideas about how to keep residents interested and engaged when they're isolated. So I came up with the idea of using the in-house channel that they broadcast movies on once a week, to use that to broadcast interesting videos throughout the day for people who are stuck in their rooms. And they appreciated that recommendation and said they were bringing it to the recreation department to discuss that. So now it's a collaborative effort between a family member and the staff coming up with ideas. And when we can work together, then we can have more success. We're not against each other. We're working for the same outcome, for the quality of life for the resident. So I just wanted to bring up those tips that are really, I think, really important. And the final reminder is, as a caregiver, whether you're physically, geographically close to your loved one or you're far away, it can be very stressful. So remember to spend time taking care of yourself. Spend time doing things that you love. Follow your passion, and remember to spend time in relaxation and breathe. And I started a series about getting back to basics. The last blog that I wrote, a blog series, the last blog was about nutrition, and there are more to come very soon. So follow me on Facebook, and that's when you'll know when I've posted a blog. So, Dr. Mara Karpel, your golden years. All right. So, now on to some passionate music. And music, Paula Atherton. All right, and we're listening to the great music of jazz saxophonist Paula Atherton. And Paula is joining us right now on the phone. Welcome back, Paula.
Hi, Dr. Mara. So nice to talk to you again.
So nice to talk to you again. Happy New Year.
Yes, Happy New Year. It's been a while since we've spoken.
I know. So how are things going? What's new?
Well, let's see. The song you just played, Keep It Coming, wound up being the number 3 song on Billboard of 2022.
Wow, congratulations.
You keep
getting these top Billboard songs. Every time I talk to you, you have another one of your songs on Billboard.
Well, I keep trying, you know, I keep trying. You do your best work and put it out there, and then you say your prayers and hope for the best, you know.
That's great. Congratulations.
Yeah, I also found out at the same time that I wound up being the number 3 Billboard Artist of the Year for 2022. So,
wow.
Two really exciting things that I did not expect either of.
That's really exciting. That's great. Congratulations on that, too.
Thank you.
Can you tell us about that song?
About the song?
Yeah.
Sure. It was produced by Jacob Webb, who's a bassist producer out of New Jersey. He produced the song. It was my, I think, first single. Yeah, first single off my 7th album, which isn't finished yet. Going to try to get it. It's going to get out this year. It'll be done this year. So that was actually released January 2022. And then I had a second single, Ready or Not, following that up. And then I think I'm releasing the 3rd single from that album. Actually, I just released it this month, and I think you have that up next. And that's called Open Road. You have that one also?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do.
Yeah.
I'm going to play that next. Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that was produced by Greg Manning, who produced my first number 1 on Billboard, Can You Feel It? So pretty exciting song coming out. So I think I might be by you. What city are you in?
We're in Austin.
Man, I was in Austin twice last year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm going to be in Dallas and Houston and Phoenix. I don't have anything in Austin yet, but how far is Austin to either Dallas or Houston? Are they both far?
Well, 2.5 to 3 hours to each of them.
Yeah, not that close.
Yeah. Well, Texas is considered close.
Yeah. Well,
in Texas, 2.5, 3 hours is close.
Really? People just drive everywhere all the time?
Yeah, it's such a big state. Everything is miles and miles away.
Yeah, it's spread out, right?
Yep. So what does your calendar look like? It sounds like you're back on the road.
Yeah, I'm home for February. And then March, I start to go out. In March, I'll be I'm playing with Jazz and Pink, which is an all-female group of jazz artists. I'm playing with them on March 11th in Dallas, and then I think they'll be in Houston on the 12th. April, I know offhand, I'll be in Atlanta, Phoenix, Charlotte, North Carolina, and then in May I go to Portugal. I'm playing in the Algarve in Portugal.
Wow, very nice.
Week of May. Yeah, I played one time in Portugal. I played the Estoril Jazz Festival years ago with a big band. And in 2019 I got to play in Madrid, but I haven't really played in Portugal in recent history, and certainly never in the city that I'm going to be in, which is called Faro.
Mm-hmm.
It's at a beautiful resort, and I think it's called Pine Cliffs in the Algarve there. And it's a boutique jazz festival. They only sell like 300 tickets. And
wow.
It's supposed to be really beautiful there. I'm looking forward to it.
Nice. Yeah, that sounds like it'll be beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe you could.
Oh, I would love to go.
There's going to be a lot of acts on the bill.
Yeah. Yeah, I would love to go, but I don't think I could do it this soon.
Yeah. Well, maybe another time. But it's funny because there are a lot of acts on there, like Jeff Lorber's on there, Greg Manning, Paul Jackson Jr. A lot of great artists on there, and I'm the only female on there.
Do you find that a lot in jazz, that you're the only female?
A little too often.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people still don't, you know, they'll think that I sing, which I do, and that's, you know, that's normal for people.
Right.
But I played in Florida last week, and the sound guy comes up to me. He goes, "Okay, so when do you think your sax player will get here?"
Oh,
I
my
said,
goodness.
"Oh, I think they're here already." He said, "Really? Where are they?" I said, "You're looking at her."
Ah, that's so crazy. I'm not going to say it's funny because it's
still
sad. Like, yeah. It really is. It really is. But, you know, I thank you for breaking through those feelings. You know?
I'm trying, you know, the re-education thing for people. Like, musicians think that way, you know, because they're used to, like, all kinds of people doing things in music. But just, like, the general public is used to women. Like, if you sing and play piano, that's normal, I think, for them. But I guess still playing saxophone for women is just something that's somewhat of a novelty, and it really shouldn't be.
Right.
But you know how it is. No matter what people think or say, you just do what
you
do anyway,
do it.
Right?
That's right. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, Paula, we're going to play your next song. All right, so don't go anywhere because we'll come back and talk for a little while after, okay?
Okay, I'll be right here.
All right. Paula Appleton, Open Road. As usual, Paula, that's another song that gets you dancing in your seat. Or not. Not in your seat.
Well, I hope so. I hope
so. Very nice. Great. I love it. I love it.
Thank you. I mean, it gives me the greatest joy to make people happy with my music, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And your music is so joyful, so, and we need more of that in this world. We need more joy, so.
Oh, I think so. More joy, more love, you know. Can't have enough of that.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So Paula, if people are interested in finding out where you're playing, and also listening to your music, downloading your music, watching your videos, all of that, what are the best ways that they can do that?
Well, I have my calendar on my website, which is paulaanderson.com. I try to keep it updated also on Bands in Town. People could sign up for Bands in Town, and then they get alerts when I'm near them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty tool to use. You can get my music on Amazon or Apple Music or anywhere you download music. It's available. And I'm also on Twitter at Patterton1. I have two Facebook pages, Instagram at Paula Atherton Music, and LinkedIn. And that's about it, I think. Yeah.
All right. Okay. So I'll post some of that on my website post about this show later tonight, so people can get all that information if they didn't get to write it down. Thank you so much for coming back on the program, and congratulations again. That's just wonderful that you made it. And again, your song made it. You made it. It's a top Billboard. That's wonderful. And you never know, maybe we'll get to see you here in Texas.
Yeah, I'm going to be in Texas a lot, just not Austin yet. A few times in Dallas and Houston coming up. But, hopefully I'll get to see you sometime in 23.
Yeah, I hope so. Well,
I hope so too.
You take care. Have safe travels and have a wonderful New Year.
Thank you. Thanks, Dr. Mayer. All the best to you, and I hope to see you again soon.
Yes. Have a good night.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Now. Bye-bye.
All right. And we've come to the end of another program. Before we go, let me let you know what's coming up in the next couple of weeks. We'll be taking the next 3 Sundays off from live broadcasts. And during that time, we'll be playing some of our recent favorites as encores. And then on Sunday, February 26th, relationship coach Roy Biancalana will be back with more on how to attract the relationship you want. And if you want to hear tonight's program again and read the information from the show, get the website links that we talked about on the program, listen to previous programs, etc., go to my website, drmaricarpel.com, and you can also hear this evening's program in as soon as 5 minutes from now by going directly to Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/yourgoldenyears, or you can listen on Apple Podcasts in 5 minutes. Be sure to follow me on Facebook for upcoming events and shows, Dr. Mara Carpel, Your Golden Years. This evening's program was produced by Accomplice Entertainment and Psyched Up Productions and sponsored by amightygoodtime.com. Thank you to my guests, Robert Glazer, Paula Atherton, and thank you, Art. And thank you all for listening. Have a peaceful night and inspiring few weeks. And remember, youth has no age. Good night, everyone. Stay safe.
Any guidance offered by Dr. Karpel is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Karpel, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any information on this program.